This is Critical Nonsense, our high lowbrow show about culture, science, and tech. This week, Joey asks us about sports scandals, cheating in sports, sports ball stuff.
Woo!
Bam, 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 bam. This is what a Joey sounds like.
16 Aaron Edges. Walking away.
This is what a Beyonce Aaron sounds like. Happy Beyonce Day to you all.
Happy Beyonce Day.
We're recording this on the day the album dropped. We have to clarify that. Sorry. It's so good. We're so excited.
And this is what an executive producer and veritas quo Jess Vander sounds like.
Hi, this is Jess. Come again.
Go qua.
Qua.
I was trying to come up with a noun of Bayhive, and I couldn't in my head, and so I landed on a random Daft Punk song title. So that's what in my head it means Jauntess.
I see. Interesting. I will not question whether or not Bayhive is already a noun. But I do have a question, which is, do we have any housekeeping? Is that what we usually ask first?
Small bit of housekeeping. We are going to experiment potentially with adding in readings of our newsletter progress report into the stream. Maybe irregular, but if you like it, let us know. But that will be coming. Maybe it already came. It went.
Who knows?
It's gone.
Came and went. Yeah. Welcome and adieu to you. Adieu. And you. And you.
Aaron and Jessica.
Happy Amelia to Belia. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I have a qua for you.
Ooh.
Qua.
Qua.
So I know, I mean, this is naturally like things that you are very up to date on, sports, your mm-hmm. love of sports, mm-hmm. the goings
on. Oh, you're ready for some sports ball.
Mm-hmm. We love sports ball.
Yes.
That is the tagline of this podcast. Did you know?
Yeah.
Critical Nonsense.
Critical Nonsense.
We love sports ball. Exclamation point.
There's a bit of a hubbub, a hoorah, and a kerfuffle happening within the world of sports. There are a number of scandals happening. Now, you might be thinking, where's Kerry Washington? Because we need to get the happy haps. And I will tell you, they're juicy. But also, wow. We don't need to go super deep into them. Shohei Ohtani and his translator and the FBI. Was the translator stealing from him? Or were they secretly gambling on? Yes, Jessica.
Okay, rewind. What are you talking about?
Give us Shohei Ohtani. Give us the Dodgers.
Yeah. Shohei Ohtani is, you know, one of, if not the best baseball players playing today. He is a pitcher, but also an incredible hitter. He can also play in the outfield. He comes from Japan, and so always had a translator with him, including in the dugout and in the clubhouse and things like that. There was some breaking news that happened that his translator was stealing from him, but now there are sort of emerging whispers of maybe they were actually gambling on games and the translator, that money was being used in that way. There's not a lot of clarity out, at least at the time of this recording, on exactly what's happening. It is an active investigation. But there is also another one where Jontay Porter, who is a basketball player, sort of a like ninth man on a basketball team for the Toronto Raptors, is being caught up in scandals where some of the biggest bets were unders on his like playing performance in nights where he like played for 3 minutes and then was like, I have a boo-boo, and then just like left the game. And so all of these bets on his unders then made a ton of money, and he's being sort of accused in some capacity of collusion in that, which is also now under investigation. But it's this big sort of like existential moment in sports, and what is the role of gambling, and should gambling be eliminated, and sports betting is going to ruin the integrity of the sport, like all of these things, right? My immediate reaction was, how is this different than insider trading? And if there's a insider trading moment, either in Congress or Martha Stewart or on Wall Street, it is addressed. But then the question is not, you know, do we shut down Wall Street, or like, how do we interact? It is like, this is bad. Don't do it. If you get caught, the end, and it ends there. And so my question for you all is, why is cheating in some places treated differently than cheating in other places?
So, you know, it is no surprise or revelation that sports ball is perhaps not my first genre of knowledge. If I'm playing Trivial Pursuit and I get sports, I just break into tears. That's kind of, you know, that's kind of how I live.
When you frequently play Trivial Pursuit.
Leave me alone, Jess. Stop coming for me. It hurts. It stings. My heart kind of quivers. Right. And so admittedly, you know, maybe I'll zag out a little bit before we zig back into sports. But, you know, the main thing that rises to me is questions of fairness and how we establish or evaluate what the rules of fairness are. And I think it's kind of, I don't know if it's just happenstance that these two scandals are popping up at the same time that I think there's the macro series of scandals in the Republican election on the political side of things that opens up a lot of questions around, like, what is fair, who should win and why, and how that's rooted in, like, it all comes back to tribalism. It's like, what team am I on, and how much do I need to win? And perhaps these are getting a lot of traction just because it is starting to surface that gray area, that what once was very black or white and what was wrong or right is now a little bit more open to inquiry, or is at the very least open for interrogation. And that plays out differently in different fields of, I guess, earning, where that cheating can come into play. And, like, to be honest, I mean, the other place that I'm always thinking of when it comes to cheating is board games and video games, you know, like, and when it comes to the ways that players are having to be, especially in video games, where in a lot of these combat games, like in mass online games and whatnot, where cheating has to be really taken seriously because it spoils the experience for everyone. And in many of these cases, there are so many teams that it allows for, I think, a greater sense of, like, justice and clear, like, organization to be dropped down. I don't know that it's as cut and dry with such a small group of people who are, like, sports megastars that are trying to, that could be putting a finger on the scale in the case of the interpreter, and then the second story that you're telling.
Dante Porter.
Yeah. From the Toronto Reptilians.
Correct.
What you said.
The Jurassic Perfect. Parks.
It is the only team that I remember because they got a dinosaur as a mascot. Just saying.
I think you're right about the, and maybe it is that question of, like, how important either is fairness to us as individuals as a concept, right? Which will have variants, you know, not to say, like, I think we sort of have, like, evolutionary learnings about fairness being social animals, but some people that is, like, ramped up even higher than others. And then also, like, what is our expectation of fairness in a certain arena, right? Like, I think there's probably an expectation in answering my own question about, like, insider trading of, like, no one has the expectation of, like, fairness in Wall Street at this point. Like, and everyone's just like, yeah, there are a bunch of cheats, and then, like, cheaters got caught cheating. But in sports, it's like, that is, like, the central conceit of the entire thing.
Well, I also think it might, it's interesting because the question you brought is like, what are the different places and like what, so I can't help but think about, like, if fairness is the common thread across contexts, like, is the thing then in terms of like in the sports context versus say like in finance, the expectation or almost like the will or ability and like stereotyping of those individuals. Like people are like, oh, those people who are finance professionals, those are smart people. And therefore, like they might be taking advantage or like breaching trust because they're clever enough to like do that versus like, oh, someone got lucky or like someone stumbled into this thing and other people are like, no, it was all, you know, like there's maybe like the stereotyping of the types of players in the game, you know, not just in sports, but in the cheating context might also be influence here, right? Like, what do you expect of the average person?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we also like, I'm realizing in the ways that innovation and progress happens in some arenas, we often talk about ideas like what's our unfair advantage, right? Like the looking outside of the bounds of what are like rules as written to find an angle. Like Chuck Klosterman years ago in his first book had a thing about how the NFL looks conservative, but the game is actually extremely progressive, and the NBA looks liberal, but the game is much more conservative because the NFL is constantly trying to find advantages in like gameplay dynamics that aren't explicitly, you know, stated that you can't do these things. And, you know, that's how like passing was invented and all, you know, like different formations and things like that. And so even in like, you know, Wall Street and in now like the data analytics world of sports, everyone is saying like, oh, like look at these, you know, the Moneyball era is like, look at these, can I find a thing that creates an unfair advantage, even though technically not unfair, it's just like I'm seeing a thing no one else is seeing and like looking for an edge.
It strikes me as interesting that it becomes complicated when the outcomes of those competitions, regardless of what they are, their scale of impact or who or how many people they impact, starts to invite, I think, more criticism. So, or more concern. So like to the extent that in a sports betting scenario, lots of individuals, especially if we're talking about like NFL or NBA or these like big US leagues that are so well known, there are a lot of people who have literal money on the line. And so the competition has a presumption of meritocracy built into it. Because if there's not that objective thing, then, well, the game is actually not what's going on the field or the court or wherever. It's actually about who is pulling the levers to be able to manipulate those pieces, those elements of unfair advantage, and being able to have control over them. And control isn't fun for anyone who isn't in control. And the majority of people are not in control in these big, you know, huge sports betting moments. And so the larger the group gets and the further away that it starts to get from something that has a premise of play, I think the more sort of acrimony you start to see and sort of a greater expectation that fairness must be a part of it. And I look specifically at the examples of insider trading versus a sports ball match game. And, you know, in the former, in theory, it's not a game. Like, in theory, it is a market that is playing out a series of dynamics. And it's almost like at its most pure, it should be who has the best vision of how when you hit the cue ball, it's going to bounce off the other balls on the table, not who is going to rig the game to tilt the table one way or another. Whereas in a game scenario, you can always imagine that we're actually just on the playground and we're watching a bunch of people playing and we want number 23 to win. By the way, it's always number 23. We all know why, but again, my 1990s basketball knowledge. Let's get Muggsy Bogues on the court. he's not number 23. I'm aware of that. I know someone's going to write in. But when we really base it in that play, I think that's when there's perhaps less concern over it because there's less skin in the game.
Yeah. But I think the reverse is also true, I'm realizing, of like what you just said, because sports have become a market as well, right? Like essentially, because of the betting, it is like people having some set of information and making determinations about like what they think is going to happen in the same way you would in like a, I don't know, like crude oil commodities or something like that. It's like, I read the news and I'm seeing this thing and I'm going to short or long or, you know, whatever the money words are on the market is the same as like, you know, is Jonte Porter going to be playing tonight? I'm going to take the over on his 7 points and 6 rebounds. And actually he goes in the game and dips out is like no different than, you know, finding out that there was like a malfunction of a valve in some oil field somewhere and then going to like short oil or something.
Yes. I mean, I can't get over how in all these different examples, there's this myth of like, you know, I'm still kind of hung up on this, like the myth of meritocracy that's rooted in all of this, that in this way, we're almost trying to decode like who is the perfect one who does this thing unassisted. And in our past episodes that we've done on sports balls, we've talked about how, you know, there's something really powerful about seeing what the human body is capable of. And there's like a spectacle in just seeing that, like, holy crap, we all have these skin bags, but there are ones who can jump that high, reach that far, be that agile. And I think that like there's a fundamental belief, whether it's in sports or others, that we have to know who is the unadulterated best, and that somehow there is a cheapening of sport being the lens through which, or competition being the lens through which, we can ascertain that when there are fingers on the scale. But that takes me to like, why are we so freaking obsessed with like that? Like, who is the unadulterated best, or who's naturally the best at, you know, at the oil commodities market? At, you know, we should all go back and watch Trading Places again after this, I feel like. I think that's a good one.
Yes.
Actually accurate. I think to my mind, it just goes back to where you started with this conversation, Aaron, of like a game that is not fair doesn't feel worth playing. How fun is it if it isn't you know, evened out in some way, right? Like, and actually the spirit of, you know, play. It's like, otherwise it's like when, you know, when someone's running away with Monopoly and you're like, this isn't even fun anymore. It's like, it actually matters less if you are the best or if you are winning in that context. Like the fact that people say like good game, like was it a good game, is actually about like how well matched and like how close a call it was, right? Like otherwise, like games that someone's running away with it isn't fun because actually it doesn't feel fair. And so maybe that's almost the thing, is like, is it an emphasis on being the best, or maybe is it back to your original positing on fairness?
The thing that makes me think about is like, is with all of like the misinformation and all of the conversations that we've been having of like social media and Gen AI and whatever, of like the truth getting away from us, it's actually interesting that sports is somehow a place where like people are in like desperate pursuit of like the capital T truth of like, was that the right call? Go to the replay, try and get like the truth right. Like, I don't think I've ever thought about sports as like you know, you think about journalism as like the place where we try to truly pursue truth and get things right. But like that is in upheaval and institutions and blah, blah, blah. But like, and maybe because it's relatable, like people who watch a certain sport maybe have played that sport and so they can connect with it. But then that desire to be like true and pure actually is valuable in a time where truth is like wibbly wobbly. I don't know.
Could be. And it can also be that, like, you know, just recognizing that even our conversation is really focused on like a US centric lens of this. I also wonder about how potent the idea of winning is right now and how obsessed and how high the stakes feel for just the idea of winning. It feels almost existential in many of the conversations that are happening all around. And so as much as it could be around like, you know, just like craving some objectivity and all of that, yeah, can also be that more people than ever before feel that the potential for winning or losing has stakes that are out of their control and that have an outsized impact on their existence. Mm-hmm. That's been my doom and gloom contribution to this conversation.
And like American exceptionalism, to your point, right? Like that, yeah, to the American lens, right? Like the, we have to know, yeah, who's the best because we have to be the best.
So this takes us to what I think will be an Aaron and Joey wrap-up corner. So perhaps I start, and Joey, you can find the rubber band to wrap it up. When it comes to the concept... Oh, nope, already failed. Joey, please take it. Please fix it.
I was getting excited. You were sort of like spoken wording it a little bit. I was like, all right. When it comes to truth, we can slam dunk lies by draining them into a sea of complexity. I don't know. We choose to watch and care and bring sports into our identity, potentially in some pursuit of truth and fairness as maybe an existential or evolutionary exercise. But the complexity of all of these things grows as markets get involved. And the question of whether truth really exists is maybe an open question. Can we know it? We might pursue it, but what we know is that meritocracy is a myth, and just be good people. I blacked out. I don't know whether that, I said anything.
We went fast through this, and that's a fair summation. Thank you for steering us through this sports ball philosophy session, because it tickled my gray matter. I appreciate it. I should see a doctor about that now.
It squished my mind grapes.
Somebody get the bottle. Because, you know, you do it, you stand on them, and then they all come out a little and spout.
It goes in a bottle after it, and then, yeah.
Yeah, it goes in the, yeah, it's really smart.
Critical Nonsense is a Sylvain production.
Brought to you by Buzzcocks, the silliest little device to use in a game because it's got the little feathers on the top of it, and it's fun to play in badminton with it. It's got a silly name. So this episode is brought to you from this. Yeah.
As always, we'd like to thank our executive producer and power forward, Jess Vander.
We'd also like to thank the coach with a whistle, Alex Contell, who also is our sound engineer, hence the whistle reference. It makes sound.
We'd like to thank our programming coordinator and middle linebacker, Les Jacobs.
We also need to thank... Oh, how do I do this? Zara Gilbert and Les Jacobs.
Norm Estrich.
Norm Estrich as well. Who make up the trifecta for this game called podcasting. It's really hard, Joey. I hate you so much.
Bill Jackson's triangle offense.
Thank
there
God
we go.
You got something for me. Thank you. Scottie Pippen coming in the paint.
As always, thanks, Alain. special
thank you,
Elena.
And also, oh, before we get to this can be the first special thanks. This is perfect. Jess Vander! She had to pop off the pod a minute ago, but we get to do what she does when we're not here, which is to thank her for being incredible, sharp, smart, empathetic, patient, and planful as we put together every single one of these episodes of the pod. So thank you, Jess, for the multitudinousness that you are, hold, and express.
You are the SEP, the smart, empathetic, patient, and planful. We're going to start a government act named after you.
I love it. It feels very Marvel, very Marvel.
Special thanks to Sportsball because, you know, it's fun. And specifically, special thanks to Jason Tatum because for some reason my daughter likes you and you're on my team. So I'm like slowly indoctrinating her to become a Celtics fan to my wife's chagrin. Thanks, Jason Tatum.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good.
She also calls him Jason Tatum.
That's really good. That's very cute. And I'm glad that you say that because I was both going to thank Channing Tatum and Jason Statham, and I'm not going to do either one of them. Instead, you know what? Why not? Thank you to both of them for existing. We'll give them that. A different duo that I want to thank is Katie Cowden and Caroline Odom, who happen to work here at Sylvain, because they helped me design some things for my living room that are being installed as we speak. So thank you for your creative vision and your very, very thoughtful recommendations on lighting fixtures and wallpaper, because they basically picked it and I appreciate it.
How did that come about?
I told everybody that that I had a few different motifs that I was considering and I needed some help. And, you know, let me just shout out Anthropology. I have never purchased anything from Anthropology. They were not in my list of, like, let me look at Anthropology Home for light fixtures. I had a whole different bucket that I was going down. And then Cowden, of course, who loves home furnishings, was like, you just might want to check them out. Based on, you know, some things that you're looking at, just take a look. And I found the light fixture that's above our dining table right now. So that was really exciting. And then, you know, I'll call out the other one, Spoonflower. That was they've got a huge database of graphics and, you know, community-built wallpapers or designer-forward wallpapers. I liken it to an Etsy for wallpapers. That was a Caroline recommendation. Got in there, checked it out. Got like 9 samples, found one that works. Love it. It's going up on Tuesday.
I've been considering wallpaper, and that is great news. Thank you, Caroline. And then Aaron for connecting me to what I'm going to have to ask him. What is it called? Spoonful?
Spoonflower. Spoonflower. If you really want to get into it, I'll throw in a bunch of other places that I looked at, which also, you know, were good, but I also was under a time crunch because I'd already booked my contractor who was going to do all of this work, and so I needed to get the stuff ordered ASAP. So yeah, I'll check the show notes. Good wallpaper stuff for all of you wallpaper heads. We call ourselves Wallies. I don't think you knew that, so I figured I'd let you know. Totally common parlance. For this community.
I've heard it once. I've heard it 1,000 times.
Indeed. Indeed.
Well, love you, mean it. Bye.
Bye.